Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Lauren Oliver is a powerhouse in the literary world. She brought readers to their knees with her debut novel, Before I Fall, left us with heart-pounding cliffhangers in her Delirium trilogy, and enchanted people of all ages with her novel, Liesel and Poe. Now Oliver has done it again with her newest book, Panic, and this time she's gone back to her more realistic roots.
Panic is standalone and realistic fiction. I mean, to be honest, it wasn't deliberate. I had a blast writing Delirium and the trilogy. It was incredibly challenging. It was the first series I'd ever written. So maybe there was a little bit of series exhaustion. I always joke that finishing the Delirium trilogy made me feel the way parents must feel when they send their kids off to college, kind of proud and extremely relieved. But it wasn't intentional to write a realistic book again. I had actually, the inspiration for Panic came from an unlikely source. It came from a fairy tale, an old fairy tale. But I started thinking about fear and what motivates people and why some people kind of respond to fear by confronting it and others by avoiding it. And I wanted to explore that in a real world setting, kind of with, you know, a very amplified game of fear, but set in a world that was really recognizable, exploring why people would participate in such a dangerous game.
The way that you brought this about, and it is the ultimate game. It really is. I mean, we see shows like Fear Factor and people have to confront their fears. But In this case, I mean, it's a bunch of high school kids that they know from the very beginning whether or not they really want to participate in this game or if they're going to be observers.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that appealed to me about writing about Panic and this very dangerous game that the teens play every summer is that, you know, I remember I grew up in a pretty small town, and I just remember there was a kind of desperate energy, always a desire to kind of break out and do more and do something exciting and kind of test your limits, because you really don't have any real power when you're a teen or real agency. You can't go anywhere. You have no money. So I really wanted to evoke that feeling in terms of Panic, this kind of. And there's also this underground element of it, because it's really a game that the teens always play, but that they keep secret or try to keep secret from the adults, from the police. And I think that at least resonates with how I felt in high school, that there was this entirely separate world, that we belonged to this entirely separate world that was totally apart from what our parents knew and what our teachers knew and, you know, what figures of authority knew.
There's a massive pot. If you can win Panic, it's tens of thousands of dollars that this one person can win. And for our characters, and especially Heather, in that, who is her best friend, it's a ticket out of CARP, which is a small fictional town in Columbia County, New York.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that really appealed to me about writing Panic as well is that I'm so interested in people. I mean, I'm interested in characters almost to a fault. It's very hard for me to kind of plot books and move them forward. It takes a lot more energy than just simply exploring why characters do the things they do. I mean, that's partly why I became a writer, just because I'm so baffled by other people and why they behave the way that they do. I really felt I could spend a lifetime exploring it. And so being able to explore each person, each character's motivation for playing, why they're desperate to get out. And I mean, in Heather's case, one of the main characters, Dodge, he's always intended to play Panic, Matt wants to play Panic, but in Heather's case, you know, she makes kind of a snap decision and then finds herself embroiled in something that's much larger than she anticipated, and her motivations really change and evolve over the course of the game, and that was really fun for me to write.
Heather's home situation is really, really quite crappy, and Her reasoning for doing Panic evolves as the story progresses, and Lily is one of those driving factors, and that's her younger sister.
Yeah. If you're writing a book about a game of fear, you know, a game called Panic, you also have to really start considering what it is that makes people brave, what bravery looks like in a normal, mundane context. I mean, you see in the book what bravery looks like in the game context, what it looks like for people to win challenges, or at least complete them. But you have to also, you know, in a novel like that, think about what is it that makes people kind of brave in their everyday lives. And that's something that Heather, who starts off the book feeling like she's not courageous, that she's pretty much a nobody. I mean, her last name, Nil, you know, actually means nothing. And she starts off feeling like a nobody. And then while she's playing the game, she discovers bravery in various other contexts, almost without realizing that it's happening. And one of those contexts is the way that she relates to her little sister and tries to protect her from, again, yeah, a pretty nightmarish home situation.
For our listeners, this game isn't something like facing only your fear of spiders or your fear of heights, but you lay the groundwork at the beginning of the book that teens have died as they do the different challenges. I mean, many, if not all, of the situations are life or death.
Yes, absolutely. And then the challenges get increasingly difficult as the game progresses throughout the summer. There are a series of kind of group challenges, which tend to be quite dangerous, such as crossing a six-lane highway blindfolded, for example, or walking between two water towers on a plank. And then there are individual challenges as well. There are, at a certain point, everybody has to confront individual fears. But yeah, the game is very serious, and it's in proportion to how serious it is. The reward and the reward is commensurately proportioned to how serious the challenges are.
And you did mention Dodge, who has known since he was a young kid that he was going to do Panic and he was going to win. But it was more in retribution to somebody else who had played Panic a couple years before him against his sister.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Dodge was a fun character for me to write because, well, first of all, I mean, it was really interesting for me to think about kind of the origins of the game, the origin story, and again, what had happened in years before, previous winners. I mean, I kind of had that, the constellation of it in my head, and I actually recently wrote a kind of origin story to go along with it, and I think I'm still very interested in the game. But Dodge is interesting because, I mean, his motivations, I mean, on some levels are pure, but I mean, what he actually is trying to achieve without giving away any spoilers is very bad. But I don't think you can't help but feel sympathy for him, and there's obviously a parallel between Dodge's relationship to his sister and desire to vindicate her, take revenge, and Heather's desire to protect her younger sister, Lily. So there are parallels between them, even though they're quite different storylines.
It's also exploring trust and what kind of trust people have in their friends and in the people that they've known all their lives, and how easily it can turn when you put money on the table and somebody's future on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of also, you know, that's an element of kind of how the game begins to work by separating people. I mean, that was kind of inspired by, I never actually even watched it, but that was kind of inspired by this almost Survivor-like element where people make alliances and break alliances, and there's all this subterfuge as people become increasingly desperate and increasingly desirous of the win for themselves.
You also have the haves and have-nots, because Dodge and Heather, they don't have much. They live in the not-so-great part of town, and then on the other side you have Nat, who's Heather's best friend, and who Dodge is secretly in love with, and she really has a wonderful home life, great parents, and lives in the nice neighborhood, but she's got her own motivations, but at the same time, I feel like she's the most manipulative out of all of them.
It's interesting that you felt that way. I don't see Nat as necessarily manipulative. I think Nat is, for her own reasons, really lost and kind of compelled by her own desires that kind of even sometimes overwhelm her. But yeah, I mean, I think that that speaks truly to a small town because, you know, I mean, again, when I grew up in a small town, and I mean, you pretty much know everybody. I mean, even if you don't really know everybody, you kind of know, you believe you know something about them. And those are generally the broad strokes, like where they live and whether it's the good, quote-unquote, area or the bad or the poor or the rich. So I wanted to be able to paint those divisions and their different influences on people.
There's another character, Bishop. The way that he is very protective of Heather and that friendship that they have between each other where they don't really need to say anything. They just know what the other one is thinking by how they look at each other. And Bishop is not in the game. He thinks it is completely stupid and tries to talk Heather out of continuing on in Panic.
Yeah, I love Bishop. I mean, Bishop is kind of, it's a very different relationship than the one of Kent and Sam in Before I Fall, but I do tend to write romances or some kind of romantic attraction that usually develops out of a real friendship, a real depth of friendship, since that's kind of my vision of of the best kind of romantic love. I tend not to, I mean, this wasn't true in Delirium, although that was, the whole book was postulated around a world in which men and girls and boys like really can't be together. But I think that my favorite kind of relationship to write is one that develops out of like a real, real intimacy, a real knowledge of each other, and then can grow into something even deeper.
That's a good way to put it. There are so many books out there that it's love at first sight and then going through the pangs of that, but having that foundation first, I think it says a lot about the author putting that in the book and having then the characters develop from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I never kind of, I mean, although I understand the appeal of it, I never really got into kind of the whole paranormal genre in which there would be kind of a guy who maybe wanted to attack you and kill you and drink your blood, but maybe he wanted to kiss you, because I don't think that in my family growing up, if you weren't sure if a guy wanted to kill you or kiss you, you should probably like lock the door and call the police, you know?
Absolutely. There are so many facets of this book, and it's not all just about the game. And as we've been talking about, it's how people develop by what they are confronted with. And Heather has found solace in this elderly woman, Anne. Mm-hmm. Seeing Heather be able to have somebody that is more of a role model, more of a parent than her mother has been and her stepfather, it's refreshing to have a stable parental relationship.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I mean, I have a tendency. Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, that's one of my favorite. That's my favorite, I guess, subplot is what it would be called, although it feels, you know, really integral to Heather's whole relationship. I mean, to Heather's whole development and ultimately to the outcome. But yeah, I mean, Anne is a woman who basically cares for, as she calls them, you know, the broken things, the animals that people abandon, things, you know, who are injured or nobody wants anymore. And Heather comes to her doorstep kind of like a broken thing as well. And it's through her relationship with Anne that she really begins to see that she's not so broken and that there's, you know, there's hope for her and everything else. So, and I think it is really important. I mean, I think it's important to show that, especially because there are a bunch of adults in particular, you know, the adults, Heather's mother, who are really so awful in the book. I think it's important to counterbalance that with by showing that that's not the universal truth of everyone, and that there are people who are good and people who will help and, you know, people who will care.
One thing that I've also noticed in all of your books is you don't hold anything back. You don't glaze over violence. The way that people's feelings are, it's laid out there, or you write how conflicted they feel. In the writing process for you, how do you decide what you want to hold back, or that you decide that you don't want to hold back? You want to put it all out there because that's what life is like.
Honestly, it's hard to say. I mean, I think that, you know, so writing is, on some level, so much, there is a lot of writing, obviously, that is conscious. There's a lot that isn't. There's a lot that just feels, especially by this point when I've been doing it for so long, that just feels organic, or, you know, that it happens unconsciously. So when I'm writing, you know, I'm very much at the start of a book might consciously kind of decide where I want generally things to go and kind of what general moments I need to depict. But in the moment, talking about feelings or depiction of individual action, I'm really so projectively, you have to just imagine yourself there. I guess it's partly because I've never really shied away from dealing with those things in my life or talking about those things in my life, that maybe I just have a higher tolerance for being able to depict them on the page too.
One of the major campaigns of promoting this book is that Universal is in a bidding war for the movie rights. What is that process like? Because I know some of the other books, they've been talking about TV shows or movies and that kind of thing. Does that affect you at all when you're seeing what could happen with one of your novels?
No, I mean, you know, it's very exciting still. I think you have to have, especially when it comes to Hollywood, you do have to have kind of a high degree of basically patience. And, you know, I mean, it's so thrilling. And I love the people that, you know, the producers who are working on it for Universal, they're really great. And of course, it's super exciting, but at the same time, it's a really slow process. It's not certain by any means. So, you know, I just try to basically focus on the work and not get too crazy about it, because otherwise, you know, otherwise you spend a lot of time agonizing over whether it's going to happen and feeling frustrated by minor delays. And, you know, it's not a great use of my mental energy, but it's very exciting. I should say that.
Well, the name of the book is Panic. Lauren, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Again, the name of Lauren Oliver's novel is Panic. It is published by Harper. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Don't give in without a fight.